Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Risk Rewired, the Energy Disputes Podcast from Burgess Salmon. In the last episode, we considered risk mitigation at the inception of an energy project through the lens of those drafting the contracts. Today, we're going to focus on the construction and operation phases, and in particular, draw out some of the differences between energy disputes and disputes on non-energy projects. I'm Richard Adams, a partner in the construction and engineering team of Burgess Salmon, and deal with risk mitigation, avoidance, and dispute resolution across a broad range of energy technologies. I'm joined by my colleague, Gregor Hayworth, a director specialising in energy disputes and dual qualified in England and Wales and in Scotland. Gregor has also advised extensively on offshore matters, so brings a wealth of experience as to how those matters differ from onshore. Welcome, Gregor.
Oh, thanks, Rich. Thanks for having me. Great to be involved in this podcast.
Gregor, my aim for this episode is to try and explain to our listeners why energy disputes are different, what makes them unique. Of course, when you think of a construction or operation phase dispute, you can generally categorise it as a dispute to do with money, time, or performance, or all of the above. However, that's only the start. For me, energy disputes are much more complex than that, and really interesting too, as you have to understand how the technology works, the usual contractual structures and risk allocations, and the issues that might arise on particular projects. Without that, it's pretty difficult to adopt a strategic approach to mitigating or resolving disputes. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, definitely agree. The energy projects, they all have their own peculiarities, whether that's commercially or legally. And if you try and treat an issue as you would any other commercial dispute, there's definitely a risk you might miss a key issue or opportunity to mitigate or avoid the risk entirely. And I guess you also have to remember a lot of energy disputes, they involve an energy asset that's operational and generating revenue. And often between parties that are tied into long-term or high-value contracts.
No, I agree. They're definitely key factors that need to be kept in mind. So to bring the topic to life a bit, Gregor, I've selected three technologies that I thought we could discuss. Process, solar, and offshore. Are you happy if we just touch on those three?
Yeah, excellent choice.
Okay, good. Let's start with process plants.
Okay. I guess that could cover a fairly broad category of energy project.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's it could encompass things like biomass, energy to waste, from waste, energy from fuel, thermal hydrolysis, hydrogen, to name a few. But there are some synergies between these areas, aren't there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And a lot of the issues we see across those types of projects typically relate to commissioning and testing and takeover issues. So, for example, the testing regime set out in an EPC contract, if that has any ambiguities, then we will see quite often disputes arise as to whether or not the contractors achieve the testing criteria and potentially whether or not a takeover has been achieved, and the achievement of takeover, as you know, will often trigger a payment under the contract. And so generally that is a time when tensions can arise and disputes are instigated.
Yeah, I think that's right, Gregor. And certainly in my experience, I think the commissioning issues are really, really key. And permeate quite a lot of sort of process plant issues that arise. It probably harks back to what our transactional colleagues were saying on the last podcast about some of the risks that you have to ensure are carefully considered at a contract negotiation and inception stage to try and foresee some of these issues and to provide the relevant drafting for them. For me, I think that the common problem typically arises where there is a disconnect between fuel input and design principles. For me, you can very simply explain a process plant by whatever you put in determines whatever you get out. There's a very complicated bit in the middle, of course, but what we tend to see, as you will know well, is that there are lots of issues and potential finger pointing as to what has caused a commissioning or testing failure, or what is stopping a plant reaching takeover, and whether that is the fuel input or the process in the middle. And I think linked to that actually is probably a point on fuel sampling, because a common complaint is, where do you sample the fuel, and whether or not the fuel actually changes in composition depending on the sampling point that you adopt. So actually, even the sampling point and the sample methodology can sometimes have a huge impact on understanding whether fuel is the problem here, or indeed whether or not it is a design issue or a construction issue. And that's setting aside operation as well, because usually when you're commissioning, especially on wet commissioning on some of these process plants, you will have potentially third-party operator assisting with the operation even during commissioning phases, which just throws added complexities into the mix and interfaces that you might not have on other projects.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the fuel input point that you made is obviously important, and clearly fuel supply is a big risk to these projects, as you know, the supply of the fuel is key to the operation. And I think, as I mentioned, these energy projects are often operational and revenue generating when disputes arise, and we've seen quite a lot of issues recently around fuel security and ultimately fuel shortages. And you know, another common issue, particularly for example in energy from waste plants, could be whether the fuel itself meets the specifications set out in the fuel supply agreement, and those can be quite complex disputes. You need to get into the laboratory testing, the testing regimes under the contract, whether third party laboratory is undertaking the testing in accordance with the contract, those all can be quite fraught with complexities and generally are quite technical in nature.
I think that's right. And you mentioned the waste specification. I think that equally applies to sort of some of the biomass fuels that we're seeing as well. So if you take, for instance, waste wood, it's very important to understand actually where your waste wood is coming from, what pre-treatment, if any, has occurred. Has it got paint traces on it? What's moisture content like? It's very important to understand what that specification is and to manage it as part of the as part of your process, and it is a whole life process for that. And I think it also feeds in a bit to the plant optimization issues as well, because if your fuel is causing performance dips, you ultimately have to optimize the process one way or another, because it's all about increasing your revenue or maximizing the revenue generation from your plant. That's the reason that you've got the project in the first place. And I think from an owner or an operator point of view, obviously, you could change the fuel, but you mentioned fuel shortages and potentially you may be locked into fuel supply arrangements, which may be challenging. Then you look at optimization on your plant and thinking about the ways in which you could potentially add enhanced equipment or enhanced steps into the process in order to help with your with managing any fuel issues, and that could rise from things like dealing with the moisture content of the fuel, dealing with rogue fines within the fuel that you're that you want to remove, to either dealing with other things such as, you know, I spoke about waste wood earlier, looking at dust suppression, which causes large big problems in the process itself. So you look at the optimization of the plant, and then you think about, well, who pays for that? Is it a capex cost? Is it an opex cost? Or how do you address it? So it can be quite quite challenging.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think these projects often have kind of complex technology involved as well, which in itself can lead to quite significant issues. And particularly when the technology is more kind of cutting edge and experimental, and obviously when you're going to get a greater risk of things going wrong with new technology, and energy contract drafters have to keep up with these issues that these new technologies throw up, and that is obviously quite a difficult task, and often unforeseen circumstances will arise which just aren't adequately dealt with in the contract, or at least clearly dealt with in the contract. And again, that's often where we see contentious issues happening in these types of projects.
I completely agree, and that's why, you know, an understanding of where these issues arise helps us to, you know, strategically guide clients through the process and try and mitigate and avoid those risks. But inevitably there are a lot of nuances which need to be considered, because the process by its very nature has a lot of moving parts. Now, having spoken about a process where there's lots of different parts and you know, biology, for instance, to consider as part of that process, you know, maybe we should move on to talk about maybe what I would describe as a more traditional form of renewable energy. Maybe not as many moving parts, and maybe a little bit easier conceptually for listeners to get their head around. And I was thinking solar is a good example of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, certainly. I think I would agree, more of a traditional form of energy project, but nonetheless one that still throws up quite complex issues, contractual issues that we come across quite frequently. You know, for example, I guess similar to the fuel supply issues that we were mentioning before, we've definitely seen an uptick in disputes arising out of, you know, availability of materials. Historically, there was availability issues with PV panels, but recently, actually, what we've seen is clients commenting on the availability of the steel itself for the mountings. And I guess availability of steel, of course, big issue generally in the energy sector and wider industries, particularly following the start of the Ukraine war. But this is just a kind of particular issue that we've seen on solar projects recently.
I agree, and I think the availability of material has a significant impact on construction build periods, and then ultimately when you can get into generation. And I think when you're in generation or operation phase, and solar performance issues are also really pertinent, I think. The generation is effectively based on the efficiency of the PV panels and their availability. Certainly, you know, we've seen issues involving, you know, wiring defects, cable trenching, inverter issues, and snail trails, believe it or not, but not of the shelled kind. Snail trails in a solar context are a sort of more visible discoloration or degradation of the solar panels, which look like lines of snail trails across the panel itself. And these can have a significant impact on efficiency, and can all sometimes result in systemic issues too. And just on, you know, systemic occurrences of a defect is something that you encounter quite a lot in solar projects. That could be issues with the wiring just being systemically problematic across the site, inverter installation, how they've been wired up to the to the solar PV, or indeed just a bad consignment of solar PV panels themselves. So you tend to find that if the problem has occurred in one part of the solar farm, there's a high chance that it will occur in other parts as well. And I think that the larger your solar farm, the more problematic that become when you get to performance issues.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, I guess linked to performance as well then is the maintenance of these solar projects, and often these solar projects are built to last, 20 odd years, and so long-term O&M contracts, operation and maintenance contracts are entered into, which will generally contain availability guarantees, and those will be linked to liquidated damages provisions. And so whether or not the maintenance contractors met that guarantee is very much a contentious and complex issue. And usually when we're tasked with looking at an availability guarantee, we're faced with a fairly horrible and complex formula used to calculate that availability. And again, common theme throughout our discussions here, if those provisions aren't clear, then again, it just leads to arguments between the parties, and yeah, not least because these can be quite high value claims that arise.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. There are lots of disputes that can arise in solar projects. It's just not when the sun doesn't shine. There are lots of problems that can arise. Shall we move on to what I think is probably one of your favorite subjects, Gregor, which is offshore. What is the attraction of offshore projects? Why do you think they're different?
Yeah, no, it's certainly one of my preferred topics, but yeah, they're very different to onshore energy projects in a lot of ways. They tend to be large scale, and I guess depending where in the world the project is being developed, the construction phase can be quite a challenging phase, and a lot of legal issues and commercial issues will arise during that period. So yeah.
And what would you say, Gregor, are the top issues that you, top two issues, say, that you would typically see on an offshore project?
I guess probably if I had to pick two, I think definitely weather would be the first, and linked to that probably vessel availability. So in terms of the weather, it's always a key battleground in offshore construction disputes, where parties have agreed, for example, a program which has certain weather windows where works can and can't be carried out. Obviously, bad weather means that a lot of vessels don't have the capability to go out and do the job. And so if a weather window where they can do the work is missed, then that can mean significant delay, which again often linked to liquidated damages provisions, and the costs and claims can stack up in value quite quickly.
So, Gregor, weather, I think, is quite significant, because, of course, you can't even get to site sometimes. So on offshore or onshore projects, you could obviously go into a site hut or just pause operations until a period of extreme weather passes. But offshore, you have to build in additional time to mobilize and actually get back out to site. So I think it just exacerbates the issue that weather causes when you're working in an offshore environment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that, I guess, links to vessel availability. And these are huge vessels generally involved in these projects, and with that, a lot of expense could be hundreds of thousands of pounds, per day. And so any downtime, for example, of the chartered vessel is going to be extremely costly. And you know, the charterer will want to avoid unplanned downtime at all costs, really. But inevitably that can happen. And vessel availability then becomes another kind of hot topic. And essentially which party bears the risk for that downtime can often drive behaviors and create disputes between parties.
I think that's very true. And isn't there also a risk of, as well as downtime, the vessel going off hire completely on a particular project, you know, due to potentially another pre-agreed charter party arrangement? That can obviously throw a project into really significant delays. You have to await the vessel to become available again, or source an alternative, which is quite difficult given the scarcity of some of these vessels globally. And as you said, who bears the risk of these issues can become very expensive and very quickly. And you need to be taking proactive steps to help mitigate the losses, and also thinking about the project, thinking about the delays to the wider project, because a particular vessel might not be available. It has a significant knock-on effect, I think, overall. And you've been talking a bit about the above water issues. What I actually find quite interesting in offshore is the subsea challenges as well. Whether that be the marine survey deficiencies, undersea cabling installation issues, and certainly the challenge of rectifying any defects once those cables are laid, and also the interface between onshore and offshore infrastructure. Those are usually provided by different parties and typically subject to different dispute resolution provisions and risk allocations. So it becomes quite challenging. It's become a bit of a patchwork quilt for these projects because of the multi-package contractual arrangements that tend to be used and adopted.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's certainly never a dull moment in offshore energy projects, and I guess yeah, that's what I love about contentious offshore work is you know you come up against quite a lot of unique scenarios. Me personally, over the years, I've actually dealt with quite a few offshore projects which have stalled, for example, due to fishers refusing to allow survey vessels or piling vessels to carry out those works to allow the project to progress, and obviously those types of disputes can be quite emotionally charged and difficult to navigate, and often can end up in injunction territory or interdict if you're in Scotland and being before the court. So yeah, there's lots of issues and factors at play and considerations when a developer is going out to build one of these offshore energy assets. Just a really interesting area.
Gregor, thank you for that. I thought that was a really interesting discussion. And even with a very quick canter through three technologies, it is clear that you know a deep understanding of the underlying technology is really essential when dealing with energy disputes in the construction and engineering phase. So thanks again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Risk Rewired, the Energy Disputes Podcast. If you're interested in reading about risk mitigation across the energy project lifecycle, visit our website to download our Energy Disputes Guide. In our next episode, we welcome a special guest for a deeper dive into energy disputes from a different perspective. Thanks for listening.